Welcome to Cleveland Moto, a vintage motorcycle podcast by people who wrench and ride. We'll be bringing you Vin Moto chat each week, so sit back, relax, and crack a beer. Or play us over the speakers in your shop while working on your latest project. Cleveland Moto, here's your host, Phil Waters.
Hey guys, and welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Moto podcast. It is a gorgeous day in early December. I don't know how the heck we lucked into this one, but everybody's been looking for their final opportunity to get that that last miracle ride out. Any December ride is a win.
No, absolutely.
Were you able to get out any today, Dustin?
Yes, I did, just to run up to the store real quick. Mainly it was because I had put Seafoam in the CB1 and just wanted to get it going through the fuel system.
And that's a big important thing. I know a lot of people love to throw stable and things like that. We've had really a lot better luck with the Seafoam. We've had a lot better luck with the product called Startron, which both seem to work very well with the ethanol-rich fuels we have now. But you can't just throw them in the tank. You've got to throw them in the tank and then ride the bike. And if you have a way to shut off your fuel tap, you know, shut off the tap while these things are running through it, so that they're in there protecting. And a lot of bikes now with vacuum-operated fuel taps, you just can't do that.
Yeah.
There's no way to shut it off. So your best defense is to just get a, you know, make sure that the product that you're paying for gets into those carbs or fuel injector bodies before you shut the thing off. It does you no good to just dump it in the tank.
Well, the CB1 is so ridiculously good on gas. I stood there forever, blipping the throttle, doing whatever I could. And I was like,
didn't want to run out of gas.
I'm like, good enough. I've taken off in that thing without the petcock turned on and made it 2 miles down the road before it even started giving me any sort of idea that it might start going lean.
So the fuel tap on that is not an anti-theft device.
No.
You don't want to chase anybody 2 miles.
So tell us about your ride today, Phil.
Well, today was a pretty awesome ride. We had a customer trade in a brand new, a 2012 CBR250R. And that is a fuel-injected little sport bike. And if anybody...
Wait a second. Before you go any farther,
yeah.
Someone traded in...
Yes.
A 2012.
Yeah. A couple from Pittsburgh came up. And they had looked, and they'd been looking around. They had done a lot of research, and shifting just wasn't her game. Hmm. And she had the bikes narrowed down to a Aprilia Sport City 250, which is also fuel-injected, a very sporty scooter.
Sure.
And then she had that narrowed down to that. She had it narrowed down to, I think, a Piaggio BV350
mm-hmm.
and a Kymco GT300i. Now, the second two bikes I listed are both big-wheeled scooters. They're tall commuter scooters. And she was one of the people that really, because she doesn't have a dealership near her, she was doing all of her basis for comparison on the stat sheets or the specs that they put in their marketing materials or on their websites.
Mm-hmm.
And we tell people that, like, no two rulers measure the same. And if you have to sit on bikes, man. You just cannot, you can't buy these things. It's like buying shoes.
Absolutely.
She went ahead and she came to the shop and she said, well, I can't sit on the Sport City. The seat is way too high. There's no way I'm going to work on it. And she was your height. And I know you can ride just about every bike.
Well, after lots of years of experience. And by the way, hi, everybody. It's Merritt Waters.
Oh, I didn't do my introductions. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Haven't been on the podcast in a long while. Really glad to be here. Pinch hitting tonight. So glad to be invited back.
Yeah, Merritt's here. Dustin's here. I didn't do our lineup. Dustin, of course, is behind the boards.
I'm always here.
Dustin's always here. If Dustin's not here, I'm not here. And it sounds great tonight because we're in the studio and Dustin's got us some great microphones, some great dynamic microphones tonight. So we'll sound really good and hopefully we don't rip your ears out.
Each have a different mic.
Yeah, we do.
No one mic is the same.
Right. We have box O mics. So she was...
We're on kind of like a little... story off of a story here.
Oh, yeah.
So we were just saying how she was picking a scooter based on size and not shifting.
Yeah, and once she got into the shop and we got her sitting on a Sport City, she immediately realized that she was tall enough.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't even need to do like the one-cheek sneak where they, you know, you scoot your ass off the seat so you can get your foot on the ground. The European and Asian girls and guys do that. And you often wonder when you sit on some of these bikes, you're like, man, the seat heights are really high. And I know Asian people and European people tend to be a little smaller than we are. And that's where these bikes come from. Yet
she the old was, tripod.
The tripod, right. Yeah. The one-cheek sneak. And she just slide your ass off the seat to get your important foot down. So you tripod when you come to the lights. Well, she did. She had the Sports City nailed. And they came out from Pittsburgh. Her husband took it for a honk around the neighborhood. And that is a quick bike for a motor scooter.
Sure.
And you remember when we were in Australia, a lot of the people in that Australian scooter club, the Sydney Scooter Club, mm-hmm. they had those Sports City 250s. So yep. very popular bike there. And it doesn't sell well in the United States, but it seems to sell well everywhere else. So yeah, she just didn't dig the shifting. And he's got bikes and, you know, they want to ride together. And he desperately needed something that could keep up.
Yep.
And looking at the Piaggio BV and looking at the Kymco GT300, which are both these commuter style, it was the first person I've had in the shop in a long time that actually appreciated the sport bike styling of the Aprilia Sport City. Because people normally go vintage. You know, they go vintage or they go big commuter style, but not too many go for the sport bike style. She loved it. Long story short, here comes the CBR250. I didn't even ask him in retrospect. I was just, the bike has less than 800 miles on it. It's a 2012. Of course, we'll take it in on trade. It runs great. I didn't even ask, and I should have, what color is it? Because you remember when we were at the show, right?
Yeah.
They had those burgundy and silver kind of two-tone mm-hmm. ones that, in my opinion, that color didn't do the bike justice.
Actually, I have a picture of you sitting on one of those.
Right.
Making your best racer face.
I was all crouched up, yeah. you know, like I was going into turn three. But it turns out the thing's black, and it's awesome that it's black. It looks very, very good in a black paint scheme.
I saw the picture on your Facebook yeah. today, man.
Nice looking bike.
That thing looked amazing.
So when it came in, they bring it in for the trade-in. We take it off the trailer for him, let him take the Sports City around for a ride in the neighborhood. And then while I'm getting their paperwork together, I looked over at Emmy and I said, well, Emmy, would you rather do their paperwork or would you rather take their bike for a test ride? And before I could get the word ride out, she had a helmet on. And so I chucked her the keys and away she went to test ride this, you know, this cool little fuel-injected bike. She brought it back and first of all, test ride's normally 10 minutes, right?
Sure.
Half an hour, 40 minutes come by. I thought she crashed. I looked on the counter. Her cell phone was still there. I was like, she's in a ditch somewhere. It's been 30, 40 minutes. We never take a 30 or 40 minute test ride. And
well, you know, you got to make sure.
You got to make sure it's perfect.
I mean,
going all the way out of state.
It did have 800 miles on it. So
800 from out of state.
Yeah, 800 whole miles and not
a
scratch.
That's high hundreds.
Right. That's in the high hundreds. Yeah. It's nearly time for a service.
And the first service.
Right.
The break-in service.
So it's a really fun little bike. And then today, I really woke up early, much earlier than I normally do on a Monday, so I could do my pickups and deliveries. Got my ass over to the Mentor store. Picked that bike up, came back to the shop in Lakewood. We had lunch, and then James and I went out, and we had a ride today that couldn't be beat. About 75, 80 miles all through the metro parks. 35-mile-an-hour speed limit in the metro parks, so that's going to keep you sane. Yeah. And then you're riding – he was riding the CBR250. I was riding the Wolf 150, the SYM.
Excellent.
And it was just cat and mouse. And it's really fun to ride a super small displacement motorcycle because you can wring the nuts off of that thing and still be legal.
Yes.
Oh, my God. We were just like, if you'd have been inside my helmet, you would have thought we were full-on GP road racing and realizing that our corner speeds were probably, you know, 40. You know, so, you know, the cop would have to be a real, you know, real dick to give us a ticket at that point. And we had a great time. We were scratching through the corners and taking the roads. When you take those roads, those turns are indicated at 20 miles an hour. And when you take those turns, I think we've discovered that twice the speed limit is what the turn is fun at.
Mm-hmm.
It's marked at 20. Taking it at 40 is just perfect.
Is that exclusive to the metro parks or is that really any?
No, some people swear by that theory. Like when they're in the Dragon or when they're driving other roads that are indicated for safe, you know, this is a 30-mile exit mm-hmm. ramp. A lot of people say that if it indicates 30 on a sport bike, 60 is a safe bet.
Well,
I wouldn't want to find out. We've all had those exit ramps. I think there's one on the PA Turnpike when you get off, and the thing just has nothing but warning signs, and it says 15 miles an hour. And I think that 16 might be the safe speed on that one, if you're really pushing it. That's tight, tight, tight.
Well, I'm glad you got a good ride in today. I know you were heartbroken when Thanksgiving
yes.
came and went and you didn't get a ride in. So I'm glad Mother Nature was able to deliver one for you today.
There's nothing worse than being trapped at a family Thanksgiving event on a road that motorcyclists love.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're sitting in there, you're having your, you know, your Thanksgiving type stuff. And about every 10 minutes, you hear a motorcycle ripping through these twisties. And we're sitting there, and it's a beautiful wooded road, and it's got some great turns on it. It's one of my favorite roads around Mentor area. And I just hear that, bah, 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 bah. And I'm like, oh, somebody's having a great time. And I really wanted to travel, like abandon everybody at Thanksgiving and just run up to my shop and grab a bike and then just split into two vehicles. Let Merrick go over, wherever she needed to go in the Fiat, and I would just go on the motorcycle and we'd arrive. Try to arrive at basically the same time. But I didn't. I was a good husband, and I stayed with her the whole time.
I saw a ton of people out on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was amazing.
It was the Thanksgiving Motorcycle Festival for Northern Ohio.
You reach behind you there?
Would you like a beer, Dustin?
I would, yeah. One of our backup.
Oh, yeah. I'm
going to
get up off my seat. So the
you put them out of reach.
I did put them a little too far away.
There you go.
Are you interested in a beer?
No, I'll pass, thanks.
You'll pass, thank you. Yeah, we're switching from Yingling tonight to Miller High Life. We got the beer. We're starting on Yinglings and switching to High Life.
Yeah, there's more Yingling in the garage.
Yeah, that's true. So, anything you've seen that's fun or interesting coming up in the world of big time motorcycles?
Well, I mean, keeping it vintage and all that. Lately, I've been noticing on a lot of the motorcycle blogs, like you got Bike Exif and Pipe Burn and all those. And I don't know if it's because you started selling Moto Guzzis recently, but I have an eye for the Guzzi now.
Yeah.
And there have been some custom builds coming up. It seems like every other week somebody's got a new Guzzi from somewhere around the world.
Yeah.
And man, they're gorgeous.
They really are.
I'm in love with the Moto Guzzi right now.
Yeah.
Dustin, are they, the ones you're seeing, are they all brand new ones, or are they a few years old? What are people working on?
Okay. And there's been a lot of, and I know a lot of talk like in Motorcycle Classics magazine, like what's the next future classic?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're trying to compare something to, like, the CB350s and 750s, the early, late 60s, early 70s Honda CBs, how everyone's building the nuts out of those right now. And they're like, well, what's the next one? What's the soon-to-be next one? And everybody agrees that the Moto Guzzi V7, the older ones.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the V50s.
Yep.
And they agree, like, that's the future classic. That's going to be the platform that people are going to make cafe racers and all that out of. And they're popping up everywhere.
They are.
And everyone that's building them, it's not a hack job. I mean, it's a serious, like, they put love into these bikes, you know, probably a couple years, who knows. You know, I didn't read all the stories. Some of them I just Google the porn, you know, I'm like, But I'm just the motor, the whole way the transmission goes in to the shaft drive to the rear. I really love how those bikes are laid out.
They look great. I'm a total agreement with you. I'm not sure if this is like one of those situations where you don't really realize how many Volkswagen Beetles are on the road until you get a Volkswagen Beetle, and then you're like, damn, things are everywhere.
Yeah.
If it's one of those situations, or if it really is, because I watch the prices on eBay for vintage bikes so carefully, and I can tell you that 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you could have picked up a 1972 or 74 Moto Guzzi, name your model, for well under 2K.
Yeah.
Well under 2K. And because they never seem to die, whether you get one with 40,000 miles or 140,000 miles on them, really doesn't seem to matter. Finding a bike with 3,000 miles on it, the way you tend to find a CB750 or a CB350, doesn't seem to be as common. People that bought those motorcycles in the 70s did ride the hell out of them.
Oh, yeah.
Like BMWs.
So, wait, I don't want to put you on the spot, but what are some of the names of the models that you're talking about?
Well, the ones that commanded a lot of money, obviously the V7, which has been reintroduced.
Mm-hmm.
The V7 back then was Moto Guzzi's sport bike.
Okay.
And that was designed to be their performance package machine. They also had a bike that was an 850cc that was venerable, that people loved.
Is that the Le Mans?
There was an Ambassador. Le Mans. There was even up to the point where there was a GT1000 Le Mans run mid-80s, early 80s. So those bikes, for their time, for their era, were sexy Italian brute machines. Then they were. The V-twin motor that, you know, we joke about the tractor motor that's in a Moto Guzzi was designed. It had a car clutch. It was designed to last a very, very long time.
Hmm.
So they did hold up remarkably well. We do see them coming into the shop all the time with 100,000+ miles on them. So the people that did own them, and some of those guys are the original owners, they weren't afraid to ride them or ride them super long distances. The interesting thing is now, if you found a V7, any of the late 60s, early 70s V7s, those bikes went from being $2,000 2 to 3 years ago to to right now, if you can find one, about 10 grand.
Wow.
Holy mackerel.
Now, is that one of those situations like when the new Mini came out, the vintage Minis just exploded in value? When the new Volkswagen Beetle came out, the old vintage Beetles exploded in value?
It's a chicken and egg.
It is. Yeah. It really is. But the prices are definitely a lot higher than they were before. One of the things that I think every garage mechanic, they get scared of Italian motorcycles. But truly, if you're going to work on a machine yourself, the Moto Guzzis were built in... It was a very, very intelligent design so that you could do the maintenance and work. Mm-hmm. You can adjust the valves without taking the gas tank off.
Right. I mean, I haven't personally done any significant work on any Moto Guzzi. Right. But as, you know, a mechanic from looking at them, I mean, everything is right there, all pink and naked.
Yeah.
I mean, you could just, you can get to everything on it.
The bikes from the late 70s to the early 80s suffer from some wiring problems that are mostly just due to the wiring that they were using then does not hold up well to today's ozone and the things that are around the wiring. Hmm. So you do tend to get the symptom of, we call it toasted marshmallows.
Yep.
Where you're looking at the wire and the wire looks just fine and you think everything's good, but just grab it and twist it a little bit. You know, bend it around your thumb, make a U out of it.
The white powder goes...
And the white powder just jumps out of the wire and you're left with a bare wire. Well, if it's doing that around your thumb, somewhere in that very crowded headlight full of wires... You've got 10 or 12 of those happening, and that's why the bike's not running right. They're really, you nailed it when you said that there's custom bikes being built, a lot of them being built. They are, the customs that are being done are gorgeous.
They're amazing. I mean, it just seems, and, you know, I don't want to knock, you know, the platform that I'm a really big fan of, you know, the Universal Japanese Motorcycle.
Sure.
You know, I love building my Honda CBs. But a lot of guys that do build Honda CBs tend to cobble them together with stuff off of a shelf and say, I have a cafe racer.
Right. It's very easy to do it.
Yeah. And it's very, because parts are everywhere.
Right.
But I think the guys that get the Guzzis have more of an artistic mind. I don't want to say more of an artistic mind, but I think they have something a little more special that they're going to go that extra mile on.
Well, when it costs you a little bit more to get it, when it's a little more exclusive, when you know you're going to be the only guy at bike night,
you know
you're going to be the only, and they're off. You're going to be the only guy at bike night riding that particular style of bike or that particular bike, sideways V-twin, what have you. It's going to be something that you put a little bit more of your heart and soul into, and that's what I've seen with the bikes.
Yeah.
When I see people taking the trouble of cutting up an old Guzzi, and you know, a lot of police departments did use Moto Guzzis as police bikes back then. There were Harleys. There were KZ-1000s.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, a lot of the police bikes were either a Harley-Davidson or some Indians out there.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of Moto Guzzis, especially in your West Coast police departments.
Yeah, the Ambassador, I think.
Yeah. They even had an automatic transmission. They had one called the Convertible.
Really?
And that had a number of adjustable features to it. But one of them was it did come from the factory with an automatic transmission for law enforcement.
So we know there's lots of great things about Moto Guzzis, the older ones.
Yep.
They're a unique niche. They might appeal to people who are more creative or unique and just wanting to be different versus the UJM, which is maybe easier in some ways just because it is universal.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you mentioned the toasted marshmallow, Phil, and when Dustin's talking about how... you know, so many people are making cool customs out of them. Other than the wiring, what kinds of obstacles do you think people are running into when they're doing restorations on a Moto Guzzi that might be different than if they're creating a cafe racer out of a Honda or something like that?
Well, the one thing that's for sure...
Shaft drive.
Well, shaft drive, exactly. Yeah. It's a shaft drive system. There's really not as much, and I don't like making blanket statements, but there really isn't as much in the way of, one, performance tuning parts.
Exactly,
where there's... Yeah. EGOD billions of performance tuning parts for your Japanese bikes on eBay or wherever. And also body kits, cafe racer parts. You know, every company out there that's making a fiberglass seat is making a fiberglass seat for every desirable UJM, every single one of those bikes.
Especially anything Honda CB.
Sure. Anything, you know, Honda anything. CB. You know, somebody makes a seat for it. Somebody makes handlebars for it. Somebody makes something for it.
Yeah. And I'm definitely, I didn't want my statement to sound like I was downplaying.
Right.
Oh no, we know Japanese you're not. Anyone who listens to you knows.
Yeah,
you're not,
right?
I mean, you love them.
They're my babies. I love them.
Yeah,
you know.
So I think because there's
just different
less
strokes for different folks. That's all.
Yeah, I think kind of the example is you brought up the Volkswagens before. Mm-hmm. If you have a guy that's into building his vintage Volkswagens.
Mm-hmm.
He might not put as much into that car that there are a ton of parts available for as the guy that's into building vintage Fiats.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, exactly. The guy building the old Italian car, he's going to be like, ooh, it's got to be just right.
Oh, yeah.
The guy building the Bug is like, I want to get this sucker on the road and ride it.
Exactly.
You know, and it's kind of the same thing with the Japanese bike guys are like, I want it to go now.
Right.
And the guy doing the Gucci probably has three other Japanese bikes in his garage that are his daily riders that he rides all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that Gucci is just an art project that's going to be just right when he gets
it done. And overall cost of the project. Not just parts, but hours. So if you know you're going to be putting 1,200 hours into something, you know, this is going to be more of a signature piece. This is going to be something a little bit higher, as opposed to you're going to build something with maybe looking down the road to having to sell it someday.
You won't get your money out of the Japanese bike, but you might
might get some money out of the Gucci, right?
Yeah.
You can ask a little bit of a higher price for it. Right now in our shop, in our world, it's the strangest thing. We're not really used to this kind of a phenomena.
Phenomena.
Like, phenomena. Every stinking magazine that's out there right now is writing a review or a test or a comparison involving the Moto Guzzi V7 Cafe Racer.
Mm, the new one.
The new one,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the consensus is when you read the article, it doesn't matter what bike they compare it to. The end result of the article is it may not have as much horsepower or it may not have whatever or it may cost $900 more. But they always throw this like little paragraph in at the end that is like, well, you know what we noticed is while we had all four bikes in our garage, the one that accumulated the most miles was the V7 Cafe Racer. The bike that everybody seemed to want to borrow or the bike that when you would go down to the garage hoping it was there to take a ride on was gone was the V7 Cafe Racer. So there was a soul factor. And when Cycle World magazine did the 10 bikes that have soul issue a few issues ago, that was one of the bikes they said. The Moto Guzzi Cafe Racer has soul.
Do you agree?
Oh, I totally agree. And when you look at – when your eyes fall on the motorcycle and you look at the attention to detail, whether it's numbering and signing each bike it's built and putting the number –
It's that Italian thing.
It is.
You know, they're just
sexy.
Of course, I'm sounding French here.
Well, but
you know.
Yet, though, I just want to say that Moto Guzzi doesn't have the same like snobbery factor that
Ducati
does, right? I mean, I'm not trying to put that down. It's just everything has its own.
I think it's kind of like the Vespa versus Lambretta.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think Moto Guzzi is Ducati's Lambretta.
Kind of the everyman's.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It still has all the charisma, but it's not...
Yeah, but it's not as big. It's not as, you know, they don't have a race team.
Yeah.
You know, Ducati's got that, oh, it's a Ducati, you know, whereas people are like, I just love my Guzzi, man.
And Ewan McGregor rides a Moto Guzzi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he probably rides 20 other different motorcycles.
He's got a couple of them. He's got a couple of Guzzis, but he really, really, really is passionate about them. I just went, and it's wintertime now, so this is one of the great things. Go watch the stuff that you watch Long Way Around. Watch The Long Way Down. They're on Netflix right now. And I'm watching The Long Way Down again. And they make it a special point, you know, as important as catching the ferry in Kuala Lumpur or wherever the hell they are, it's as important to them to go to the Moto Guzzi factory in Italy and tour the factory and see the 12 guys in the one room, the only 12 guys that build Moto Guzzi motors.
Is that all?
That's 12 dudes.
Wow.
It's 12 dudes. Every motorcycle, 10,000 motorcycles per year is all they produce. So it is a rather limited production, considering that it's a name everybody knows. They don't build a hell of a lot of them.
That's
only
pretty cool.
Only around 2,000 of them come to America.
Well, what other internationally distributed motorcycle brand makes that few?
I don't know. I really don't.
I mean, that's really...
I don't have those numbers. And as a dealer, that's why I say I'm boned, because every stinking magazine says... This V7's awesome. And I ordered 20 of these V7s, and I got like four. So we are definitely going to sell out. And it's just one of those things that it becomes a very difficult thing. I don't ever like to be that pushy, arrogant type dealer, but it's getting to the point where I have to say, if you're coming in to look at a Moto Guzzi, you're either buying or being angry at me in June when I have none. So you're either buying it now and then you'll have your bike in March or whatever, or you're going to say, oh, I'm going to wait till March. And if you wait till March, good luck, man. I hope you enjoy your Moto Guzzi poster because that's all you're getting.
Yeah.
You know? And, oh, well, I'm going to buy one that's 2 years old and used. Believe me, if there was one that's 2 years old and used out there, I've already bought it. I'm trying to supplement my inventory any way I can. There are no two-year-old used Moto Guzzis out there. And the guys that are selling them are getting as much money as a brand new retail one. When I see a two-year-old bike on eBay going for over current retail.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So that tells you people want the product. They just can't effing get it. So that's fun. So remember a couple of podcasts ago when we were sitting around talking about these awesome motorcycles we were never going to see?
Which one?
Mm-hmm. Well, on the list of awesome motorcycles that we were never, ever going to see, I love being made wrong.
Are you talking about the one we talked about last week?
The Honda CB1100F? Yep. Yeah, the Honda CB1100, or now they're just calling it a CB1100. We all call it a CB1100F. Well, go to the bank, grab your checkbook, whatever it's going to take. Here it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's here. It's coming. We're going to get it for the U.S. market, supposedly in 2013, depending on which magazine you read.
Did we not have that info last time? I thought we...
Well, I got more info.
Last year,
last time, I think when we talked about it, we were talking about probably.
Yeah. I knew we knew it was going to come in 2013, but there were no specs yet.
Yeah. Well, we got specs. We got everything. We got test rides. We got the whole deal. Do you remember when we were talking about that that Kawasaki W650 and we were talking about how like the W650 from the late 90s, early 90s, became the W800, the new one?
Yeah.
And the new one with 800cc motor.
Oh, it's a turd.
Yeah, right. We compared everything that we could compare. And the one from 92 and the one from 1970 beat it. Like, it got kicked.
Oh, yeah.
It got its butt kicked by the previous generation thereof.
Oh, it was a brand new 800cc motorcycle that
with fuel injection.
That couldn't beat a 500cc 40-year-old Honda.
Correct. Yeah, when we did all the numbers. Well, this is an interesting thing. There's that statement. What is it? Everything old is new again?
Sure.
And I like the statement now. I'm changing up and saying everything new is old again. Because that's what we got going here. I understand in Japan, due to the taxation laws and due to heavy duty, you know, getting the old bikes off the street, the Japanese people, they have not had the luxury of being able to ride a 1983 CB1100F. But we got them in this country like England's got castles.
Oh.
You know, we're just tripping all over the damn things. And so I took this latest issue of Cycle World hot off the presses, and I went through the numbers. And then because I couldn't get some great numbers, I went to the Japanese website and I also went to the Australian website where they've had the bike for a while and was able to compare the numbers that they have there. There's two things right now.
I did the same thing when I first heard that was coming out.
Yeah, there's two things right now.
I went to every website I could find.
Yeah, this bike has got major, major appeal. Why? Well, one, it looks just like, you know, it looks like what you want a 70s a modern version of a 70s bike to look like.
The tank's a little 80s for me, but I'll let it go.
Well, and that's where we're kind of getting to the point. We, in America, we like our retro, super-duper retro.
Yeah.
And, you know, a couple of years ago, we liked our Prowlers and our PT Cruisers. We were 50s retro. And then we got into 60s retro.
I never liked the PT Cruiser.
Me either, man.
I wanted that to be on record.
I don't even like them as rental cars. Yeah. You know, it ain't cool. I don't care how much wood tape you put on the side.
Exactly.
It ain't a cool car. So this to me does look 1980-ish. You know, in that frame, 79 to 80-ish, which isn't my favorite era for motorcycles. But I believe at some point in this podcast history, we might have said that 1983, 1985 was when technology had gotten to the point where they could squeeze as much horsepower as they needed to out of a motorcycle.
But they couldn't.
They couldn't stop it.
Yeah.
The EPA was in their ass, and they couldn't make it go around corners really great. But boy, they had the ability to get the horsepower if they needed to.
It could go. That's probably why there's so many of those like KZs and all that people made drag bikes out of.
Oh, yeah. They're really good in a straight
line. It goes fast, straight.
Yeah, really, really
awesome.
Well.
And then you need a lot of time to stop.
We get this new one, and I'm just going through the numbers because the numbers are kind of freaking me out a little bit. So this is the brand new fuel injected, and I have to specifically say fuel injected. Okay, it has a 4-in-1 pipe on it from the factory.
And it looks very much like the old school 400F Supersport.
Sure does look a lot. It's got the twisted spaghetti.
Yeah, twisted spaghetti
header, which I love, and immediately makes this bike 10 times more sexy than if it would have had a 4-in-2.
Absolutely.
Okay, the rims are...
Same color, red.
A very retro-looking rim. It's an alloy wheel. Mm-hmm. So I started going back and looking at the 1983 CB1100F. Its namesake.
Yeah.
The bike that we should compare it to. They're both 1100cc's.
Absolutely. Give or
take. Now, of course, the 1983 is not fuel-injected.
No.
It's not fuel-injected. It's four big-ass carburetors.
And if it was, I would say run away from it.
Right. Right. Sure, because the
1983 fuel injection was no good.
Oh, yeah. We had cars with that on there. Not good.
We had a few anti-Chryslers with the fuel injection from the 80s, and that was never a good idea.
Yeah. It was more like just something that went...
You might as well have, like literally a squirt bottle under the hood, and your foot
was
hooked up to the squirt
gun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was automatic fuel dripping system. Okay. How many horsepower do you think this new CB1100F puts to the road?
Oh, to the road. No, 105.
Well, wait. You didn't say how much the old one did.
You're damn right I didn't say that, because it's going to have much more impact when I tell you what the old one did after you tell me what the new one did.
All right.
105.
There's a method to my madness. Okay, so you say this new one puts 105 horsepower to the ground. I mean, it's 1,100 cc.
He's not challenging you.
I'm not challenging you.
Yeah, back, right. Making sure he
heard
you.
And don't worry. We're not putting too much weight in the whole rear wheel
brake horsepower, rear wheel horsepower.
We're just talking about
this is Cycle
horsepower.
World. It's
Cycle
just,
Magazine.
I'm saying 105.
It's on a dime.
Right around there. 105.
Okay. All right. 105. Okay. Now, here's what I have to tell you before I give you this next piece of information. That this new motor is a dual overhead cam motor.
Mm-hmm.
It's air-cooled.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 5-speed transmission.
Yeah.
So it's exactly the same as the old motor.
Right.
Difference is that this one's fuel injected. Oh, and this one's not really 1,100 cc's. It's 1,140 cc's.
Right.
And the old motor was 1,096. A little under 11. This one's a little over 11.
50 cc's less.
It's a scooter more, right? Okay.
It's a moped more.
Right. So this new one,
mm-hmm.
you figure around 105.
Figure around that, yeah.
And are you basing that on any kind of knowledge and formula, just a ballpark?
I'm basing it on that it is air-cooled. Mm-hmm. It is...
So it's not going to be 150 horsepower.
Right.
It's air-cooled.
Right. It's a giant motorcycle. It's based off of an old motor design.
Mm-hmm.
It's not based off of, a GSXR.
Right.
Or, any super-tuned, going to make a crap ton of horsepower. I know the red line?
8,500.
It's 8,500, yeah. Low red line.
8,500. Mm-hmm. So compared to your 600s and stuff.
And 8,500 on a four-cylinder is kind of, that's like Harley range.
Yeah, it's kind of low. We're starting to be like, why isn't this higher?
Yeah. So that's why I'm thinking. Sure. Around 100, 105.
Yep. Okay. So the old one,
mm-hmm.
110 horsepower. The new one, 85 horsepower.
Boo.
Boo indeed.
Oh, come on. This is the same problem we had with the W800.
Exactly. So, and I decided that I wasn't just going to trust one source of data for the old one because 1983, maybe they didn't, use the same horsepower measuring mm-hmm. techniques. No, actually, by 1983, the technology was enough that they were doing horsepower the exact same way they're doing it today.
Yeah.
It was rear wheel horsepower. The European model, the model for the German roads, was governed down to 100 horsepower. The model we got in the U.S. was 110 horsepower.
See,
and if you happen to buy a CB...
For the old one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I work on old bikes. Yeah. I guess my brain's stuck back there.
And if you would have bought CB1100R,
mm-hmm.
the sport bike, that was 125 horsepower out of the same motor. Okay, so that's cool.
So we know that motor can do more. So
absolutely.
In my mind, my little devious brain here is going like...
It's going to get worse.
What can we do for that bike?
It's going to get way worse.
Oh, no.
It's about to get way, way worse for you.
Okay. Do you need like special tools to remove this?
No.
Is it like trying to take your Xbox apart?
Yeah, well, you're never going to take the fuel injector off this bike no matter what. Okay, so we got to think, fuel injection. So what's some of the other advantages of fuel injection? It's going to get great miles per gallon.
Sure.
It better, right?
Yeah.
We've lost...
EPA, it's going to be... They're going to be happy.
We've lost 25 horsepower.
Mm-hmm.
You'd better damn well give me some miles per gallon.
Hell yeah.
Okay. What do you think the miles per gallon is? Now, I'm going to tell you what the miles per gallon was on the old bike.
Okay.
I'm going to give you that. It was 39 miles per gallon. Some tests had
and
it as high as...
that is respectable.
Some tests had it as high as 45 miles per gallon, but I'm going to give you the low number that I was able to find in a Cycle World, interestingly enough, test, was 39 miles per gallon. Okay. So it got 39 miles per gallon being ridden aggressively back in the day.
And I think that is highly respectable.
Me too. So what kind of miles per gallon do you should get now?
I'm gonna have to go higher because of the fuel injection.
Fuel injection, right? I know you got 25 less horsepower.
I know you're gonna slap me after I say it.
Fuck you all up.
I'm 55.
36.
Jeez.
Really?
Oh, now
how
we
do
got
you even do
now
that?
We got a major problem because your brain is going, where did all these horses go?
Yeah.
Who left the barn door open and all the horses got out? Yeah. Okay, so
we lost ponies, but we're
right.
We're using more feed.
Right.
You know,
right.
We've lost some livestock here.
Right. So clearly we have a major problem here. Okay. So now we have to look at, and this to me is one of the biggest things ever. We go back and we say, well, now you know we're only getting 36 miles per gallon on this new one. So
that's terrible.
I hope it's got a gigantic gas tank. Okay.
Oh, no. I said the tank was kind of small in that, like 3 gallons or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you get 100-mile range on that bike.
Okay.
On a cruiser.
They're calling it 110 miles range.
The old bike. On a bike that's a cruiser.
The new bike is 16-liter gas tank. The old bike was 20-liter gas tank. So you're a whole gallon heavier on the old bike. You had a whole gallon of gas more.
Well, that's 8 pounds.
Okay, well, guess what? I'm so glad that we did that in this order because that's 8 whole pounds the old bike had to drag around that this one doesn't. It's a good thing it had the extra 25 horsepower.
That's right.
Because it had 8 more pounds of gas to haul around with it.
That 8 pounds, it's like a child.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the new bike weighs 545 pounds.
I know the old one was close. 495.
Well, the old one was 536.
So
the old bike
still 10
was legitimately
lighter.
10 pounds lighter, even though it was carrying damn near 10 pounds more gas.
A slightly larger child lighter.
Exactly. So the old bike's lighter. The old bike's more powerful.
That's like a child with accessories.
The old bike has a longer range. The old bike has more horsepower. So now we really got to stretch now. We got to go, shit, man. Well, something has to have proceeded. You know, there's got to be progress.
The suspension.
Oh, yeah, hold on.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So let him list. So what kinds of things now are we going to do? What do you want to find out about next, Dustin?
Well, from the late 70s, early 80s to now, and my gosh, this better be true.
Oh, yeah.
The suspension,
yep.
Both front and back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that better be like NASA amounts of technology better. Seriously, like, get you to the moon and back kind of technology.
I mean, how many
better
years is that? 1983 to 2012?
30 years.
Right?
Yeah, it's almost 30 years.
30 years. 30 years.
And then the braking just better be astronomical. That thing better just stop on a dime and stop beautifully and comfortably and safely.
And better than the old one.
And better than the old one.
And much, much, much better
much
than
better.
The old one.
I mean, so much better.
Okay.
With that 30 years, I mean, it better just be incredible.
So we've done motor.
Yeah.
We've done horsepower.
Right.
We've done weight.
Yeah.
All right.
And I know they can screw all those three things up very easily.
Very easily.
Yeah. Okay. But suspension, I mean, even a rudimentary suspension by today's standards should be better than 30 years ago.
Okay. Let's play the game.
Okay. And I know it's, I'm not going to lie.
What kind of forks, what kind of forks do you think are on this modern brand new motorcycle?
Showa.
Forks.
Showa. Okay.
Showa forks.
Should you guess the old ones?
Are they right side down or are they upside? Upside down or right side up?
They're right side up.
They're right side up.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're adjustable for?
I would hope so.
Rebound, preload, dampening.
For a $14,000 motorcycle, I would seriously hope so.
They're not.
I don't think they are.
They're just,
I saw the pictures and I really didn't see anything.
They're really only adjustable for preload.
Yeah.
For the fronts. Okay, the backs. Okay, the backs. The backs is, you know, that's where you should be doing the most of your adjustment if you're going to be riding aggressively or just, say, having a passenger.
Sure.
Okay. The backs.
Just spill the beans.
Five-way adjustable.
Preload.
Preload. Just preload.
Preload.
Mm-hmm.
Preload.
So they really wanted to make a vintage bike.
That's 60s technology.
Yeah.
It's Sputnik.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not new NASA.
In 1983.
Sputnik. It's so true.
Yeah. Let's just start calling it the Sputnik.
Sputnik.
Yeah, the Honda Sputnik.
Okay, so in 1983.
Bike ride you don't ride bike.
In 1983, the front suspension on this motorcycle in 1983.
It had air adjust.
Was fully air adjustable.
I have one of those out in my garage.
Rebound.
The whole front end.
And compression dampening adjustable.
Yep.
Not just preload.
Right.
Rebound. And preload, compression, dampening, adjustable. That's huge technology.
That was amazing back then.
Right. Now, Oh, well, but there have been 30 years, Dustin, 30 mm-hmm. years. This rides on massive, massive 41 millimeter tubes. Dustin's laughing because the old one ran on 39 millimeter tubes. And really, that ain't a hell of a lot of a difference for 30 years of technology.
Well, we'll give him the 2 millimeters.
Yes. The rear shocks, by the way.
You win this one.
Yeah, 2 millimeters. The rear shocks, by the way, on the old bike from 1983 were also Showa. They were also fully adjustable, and they were remote reservoir nitrogen-charged gas shocks.
They were very nice shocks.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Fully adjustable.
I tried to get a set for the 750. Yeah.
So the new bike doesn't have it in the suspension category either. The wheels and tires.
Don't forget brakes.
Okay, brakes. How many brakes do you think this bike has? The
new one. 2 front, 1 rear.
Exactly. That would be, anything else would be a crime. You know that the old one had 2 front and 1 rear too.
Exactly.
And that this has Nissan 4-piston front calipers.
I did.
Dual pots.
Yeah.
The old one?
Nissan.
4. Dual piston.
Dual piston.
4 pot. Or piston dual pot calipers. So the braking is the same. I was able to find a really good braking chart from the Australian website for the new one that said from 60 miles per hour, it was able to slow itself to a halt in 136 feet. It's respectable.
Sure.
And that the old one from 60 miles an hour was able to drag itself to a halt in 138 feet. So that's a 2-foot win by the new bike with the modern super duper technology.
Well, it's not carrying that extra baby.
That's also true.
That'll get you 2 feet.
The old one was not carrying the extra baby. The new one is carrying the extra baby.
Oh, that's
the new
true.
One is much heavier. So then we have to look at the wheel size, the tire size. You're going to say, we all know the problem with the old bikes, skinny tires.
Yeah.
Skinny tires on the old bikes. This bike worked so fucking hard to be retro, they gave it skinny tires.
Yeah, I can
tell. The back tire on this bike is a 140. The back tire on the original bike was a 130. They've made it a whopping 10 millimeters wider. So.
And that's just in the aspect
and
ratio
the front's
of the tire.
The same, right. The front's the same, too.
110.
They're running 110. They're, so they're running the same tire configuration as they did way back in the day. The only thing that's different. Now, the interesting thing is we talk about media. Mm-hmm. And we talk about how these companies, media, hype these bikes into oblivion. Everywhere I've read says that we're going to get this bike for $999.99.
I thought it was a lot more than that.
Me too. And I did think it was a lot more than that too. But I have followed it up and I've read everything that's out in print right now. And everybody has been told to drink the same Kool-Aid, $999.99.
I saw $13.99.
Well, if you take the yen,
mm-hmm.
and you translate yen to dollars directly, it's $13.999.
There you go.
That's the price I saw.
In the Australian market, they are paying $15,500, almost $16,000 for this bike.
They have crazy taxes over there.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Yeah.
So for Australians, it's about $15,500, $16,000. For the Japanese market, where they don't have to ship it as far, it's $13,999. I think that if they do get it into here for the $10,000 price point that they're sort of pimping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've all seen the price point game before, and very few companies ever bring a bike out for the price they say they're going to.
Right.
And this is a great example of, if they can do it at $999.99, is it then a better deal than doing what I did today, which was going on eBay? I found a 1983 CB1100F with 3,900 original miles, and it looked like showroom condition. It was beautiful. It was down in Atlanta, Georgia. And the guy's buy it now price on the bike was $3,400.
There you go.
So
I was just going to say that.
That's a tough call, man. I mean, that is a damn tough call. New bike with a warranty. Let's say you can beat the crap out of your dealer and get it out of the showroom for, he's advertising at $999.99. Let's say you can get it out of the showroom for $11,500. Because Honda has a lot of, you know. The paperwork charge is $600. So
tax, title, delivery,
you got
blah,
it.
Blah, blah, blah.
So if you can get it out the door for $11,500, I'd say you did really, really well. Compare that to $3,500. This one does look, in my opinion, it does look better. It looks more like a 70s bike, not an 80s bike.
Right.
But there's something neat about the 80s bike, and that is I did a check on I don't use Geico insurance. I'm not endorsing them, but their website made it easy for me to check. The 1983 motorcycle will cost you $99 a year to insure if you're a 40-year-old experienced rider.
Right.
this CB1100F brand new motorcycle will cost you around $1,300 a year to insure.
Mackerel.
So it is a difference between $9 a month and, well, the actual quote came out as monthly quote. It was $9.99 a month, which is their lowest chargeable amount at Geico for the 1983 motorcycle, despite the fact that it's a superbike with over 100 horsepower.
Right.
Value
with
time.
More horsepower than that.
Yes. Whereas this one did come in at around $92 a month insurance.
Let's think about this for a second. So you are talking about whether there's really any incentive, whether the new bike is really any better than the old one,
right,
and the fact that it costs a lot more money,
sure,
not only to purchase but also to insure.
Right.
So I wonder if you can, if either one of you guys can think of other bikes that have come out maybe in the last couple of years that are kind of what's new is old again, where it reminds you of the same thing, and we can look at the track record of how that bike did. Because I think part of what you're suspecting is that this is not going to sell, that there are better alternatives that are old bikes,
right,
that's more for your money, and that not that many people are going to be tempted by the new bike for no better performance and a lot more money. So does this remind you of any other bike that's come out in the last couple years?
Well, we mentioned before the W650.
Yeah.
Which, and they only sold that for a couple of years.
They only sold it for a couple of years. It was a marketing disaster. It was an absolute nightmare
for
dealerships. They have the W800 in other markets. Now, this is one of those situations where I think that they're reluctant to bring a particular bike into the American market. The W is a great example because they knew that they didn't do well with their W650 that they did the last time.
But they did very well in England and Europe and Australia.
Yeah, they did.
So I think they still sell them over there.
Right. Yeah. And I really do think that when you look at that kind of a comparison, this bike has been available in the Asian market since 2008 or 2009.
Okay.
You know, they've been selling this bike, and they have a 750 version of it there as well.
I think they're getting smart, and they're looking at what's happening right now in the U.S., and they're like, you know, holy crap, like, they got this this Cafe Racer TV show, and you can go on, like, just any number of dozens and dozens of internet forums that have, you know, thousands, sometimes over 10,000 members that all deal with vintage Japanese motorcycles.
Yeah. Right.
And I think they're just looking at it going like, wow.
We've
got this thing that previously we couldn't have sold to anyone there. And I think they're thinking like, well, now we can.
Yeah.
Because people see our old motorcycles everywhere. I mean, and during any given motorcycle season, I can't even tell you how many old Japanese motorcycles I see on the road. I used to think I knew all of the guys, but
No, they're out there, and they're getting, there's a lot more.
Yeah.
I went to the Japanese website for the CB1100F, and it was the website from a couple of years ago when they launched the bike, and they did a beautiful video presentation of what their attention to detail was, and their attention to detail to replicate a bike from the 70s. They even replicated the iconic 1970s DOT taillight. And I'm not kidding you.
I have a garage full of them. They could have came over here.
The fucking taillight on the back of this bike is not the shitty taillight we're getting for the U.S. market.
Yeah.
No, it's the taillight they're so proud of for the European and Asian market, and it is a goddamn 70% scale replica of the Stanley taillight that came on the back of every American CB. And it's 70% scale. It's not the full size. It's shrunk down.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Right. It's stylized. Let's call it that. You can tell when you look at it. I'm going to pass the magazine over to Dustin. He's going to look at it, and he's going to say, hey,
there it is.
Of all the taillights they could have possibly put on the back of that sexy motorcycle.
Of all the taillights they could have decided not to make anymore.
They made an homage to the taillight that we routinely rip off the back of our motorcycles.
Yes, to any future purchaser of this motorcycle, if you want it to be full-blown retro, for at least the first dozen of you, I have one.
We can get you the real deal.
Yeah, we can get you the real deal.
The authentic.
Yeah. And for as many as I have, Phil has probably five times more.
We can get you as many of the authentic, original Stanley DOT ugly-ass taillights that you want.
We will get you so retro
that you can't sleep at night. It's going to be fantastic.
You'll make hipsters angry.
It's great, though, that they've got a close-up. They have six close-up pictures in Cycle World, and the last one, the closer, is the taillight.
That's just a good tongue-in-cheek, like, eh, and we're done. Bing, taillight.
I think they probably had a good laugh of that.
I bet you in every issue of the magazine, there's a little something like that for everybody. It's like, and we're finished. You notice on the shape of the tank is very 80s.
It is.
It's very much an 80s tank. It's not a 70s hockey. Tank. It's Nighthawkish, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of night hockey.
They threw a CB-77-style tank emblem on there.
Mm-hmm.
So to make the tank look older, the tank emblem that they threw on there is an iconic tank emblem from the 60s.
Actually, my favorite emblem.
My favorite emblem as well.
Yeah.
And then to give the tank a curve that it does not possess in real world, they threw a curved-shaped pinstripe detail, a gold. If you know your Hondas, you know gold's a big thing for them. They put a gold stripe painted on, or probably a decal, stripe on this thing, and it is seriously, it is a round peg in a square hole.
Ugh.
That stripe that's on there is a beautiful curved stripe on a very blocky gas tank to fool the eye into thinking the tank is
that
curvier.
It's a little more round, yeah.
Right. So, you know, good parts bin engineering on this one, but yeah, nothing was more angular than the 83. The 83 was just a study in angles. Like, it didn't have any round parts except for the tires.
And I think a lot of what the engineers are probably not wanting to undo is decades and decades of wind tunnel testing.
Right. Yeah.
And
we know this
they
works.
Know certain shapes yeah. work, and right. they're like, why would we go back to that just big, round,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
no thought put into aerodynamics kind of bike? You know?
I think that the next one that we're going to see is going to be like the true vintage, and it's going to be a 1981 Honda CB750 Custom. Ridiculous buckhorn bars, two-tone brown paint job and all. And
eventually they'll get it right, and they'll re-release a CB350 Twin.
Oh, God. I you know what? I can't think they're going to get it right. I do think that we're going to have to live through a whole era.
Error.
These, yeah, an error. Thank you. We're
going
to have to live through a whole fucking
error.
Right. Yeah, of 81 CB750 Customs that are going to be the fake-ass Sportster that they are. And I think it's going to be like Japan is going to go crazy for them. And we're going to have to suffer through that again.
Yep.
You know, and it'll just like, oh, we could be going and back and getting an 81 CB6, you know, 750 Custom that made no horsepower and looked ridiculous, or we could get a brand new 2014 one.
Next thing you know, they'll be making, you know, retro two-strokes modeled after bikes from the 60s, and that's what we'll all be riding.
And they'll be fake two-strokes. They'll have sound engines on them that will just create the ring-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding-a-ding, because this bike does have a servo baffle in the exhaust, by the way. Yeah. I was reading up on it, and it has a vane in the pipe that controls the DB. But it also creates back pressure to make it run. What we were talking about earlier is where did the horsepower go? And actually, for people that are paying attention, if you want to know where the horsepower went, why the sum of its parts does not equal a greater whole, the reason this all went away is this is an air-cooled motor. And because it's an air-cooled motor, it does not have the quieting benefit of a liquid jacket. So in order to make the motor EPA compliant, and when we think EPA, we always think smoke.
No, there's noise too.
But there's noise as well.
Yeah.
And to make any air-cooled motorcycle EPA compliant, you have to start looking at a lot of different issues. And I think on this particular motorcycle, in order to get an inline dual overhead cam, and we all know what they sound like, dual overhead cam, air-cooled motorcycle, to get quiet enough to pass EPA standards. Well, getting rid of four big honking, sucking carburetors is a good first step. Mm-hmm. Getting into that single, and it has one single fuel injector.
Really?
Yeah. It runs automotive style fuel injection.
Cool.
So that is kind of cool. It's going to be a bugger in the aftermarket when we start talking about pipes, you know, to try to squeeze this performance out of it. One of the companies that's on BikeXIF already has pictures of a company that makes a hot rod seat for it, a little bikini fairing, and they do a 4:2. I love this. They take off the 4:1 awesome looking CB400F style pipe and they put on a set of 4:2s.
It's terrible.
That looks like, oh well, and it's black, so it looks exactly like the 1983 exhaust.
Yep.
Go Japan.
Well, here, wait, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Because before, when you were talking about performance,
yeah.
I was thinking, well, when you said where'd the horsepower go, I was thinking, well, maybe this is some kind of back pressure thing. But I didn't say that because I thought this might be going back to my early two-stroke knowledge, and it would just be way off base for this bike. So it does have to do with exhaust?
Yeah, it does. And one of the things about the exhaust, congratulations, Maren.
Yeah. All right.
You know that this exhaust will also have a catalytic converter built into it.
Yeah.
I mean, they all do now. So this big pipe that you're seeing there, it doesn't even resemble internally what you think of when you think of a muffler, which is a tube with baffling around it.
Yeah.
That's not what this is. This will be a multi-chamber pipe with catalytic material inside, a honeycomb that will greatly restrict the flow of the gases going through it. They'll also put a baffle in there, a baffle for the noise, mm-hmm. to dampen the noise. And they said it's a movable vane, which is mm-hmm. hilarious. I mean, that means it's somehow throttle regulated.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
I don't like that.
I don't like that at all. And if you're only going to give me 85 horsepower,
yeah,
out of an 1140 cc motor, and I'm only going to get 80 some horsepower, boy, it had better be sexy in every other regard.
It's like Harley specs.
It starts to get in that kind of I feel robbed zone.
Yeah.
And a big part of that is when we do that.
How much torque does it have?
Yeah.
It's got a lot of torque. Is it torquey?
And I totally understand marketing torque. Mercedes has done it for years. They don't talk about horsepower. They talk about torques. Everybody likes
Top Gear talks about torques.
How many torques does it have? It's got 47 torques. So I really understand the use of torques as opposed to using horsepower. They just measure slightly different things in the way we ride. But the vast majority of us know that when we jump on a motorcycle, you experienced it with the SV650.
Right.
The torques are what make you smile.
They do.
Right. And the horsepower tends to be more of your CB1 experience, where it's the power is there, but you have to go further, higher, and things to get it. Mm-hmm. And by the time you've gotten to that point, you have not had the visceral torque experience.
Right.
So the torque seems to be a very pleasant experience, whereas the horsepower is something that eventually, or you know, maybe suddenly you get, but it's a slightly different feeling when you're talking about measuring them in the form of a motorcycle.
I totally agree, because you know, take it off of the CB1, it's just like, it, you know, and you're like, you're going fast,
right.
And you're getting faster, and you can make it go fast.
Right.
But on the SV650, I mean, I guess it's not a proper comparison.
Well, you know, a good comparison, though. There's a really, really good comparison out there, and that is if you we have a customer who has a CB750K. It's a 1978 CB750K. And he came in recently, and he test rode a Moto Guzzi V7 Classic. So these are both 750s. Now the Moto Guzzi is lighter. It's under 400 pounds. And we know a CB750K is going to be around 436, 440. The difference between the two bikes, and his CB750 runs really good. I mean, I've ridden it around. It's pretty damned awesome, about a 9,000-mile bike. And, yeah, you get on these two bikes, one being a V-twin with shaft drive, the other one being an inline four-cylinder with chain drive, and you honk it. And, yeah, the numbers indicate that the CB750 has a lot more horsepower.
Right.
The numbers indicate that because it's chain drive, it should be, you know, we love chain drive off the line, man. That's how we make power get to the back wheel in a hurry. With shaft drive, it's not as violent, you know, mm-hmm. it's not as fun. But he goes out and he rides his CB750 every friggin' day. He jumps on the 750 Moto Guzzi, and he comes in and he's like, man, that thing is fast. Oh, man, when you leave a light, it's like right now, it's like roar, and he makes the roar noise, and you're like, yeah, well, I ride a lot of motorcycles. It's not exactly roar, but I can see where you're coming from, because
well, he's getting that twin sound out
of it. He's getting a twin sound. He's getting the twin feel. And Merritt, Merritt went to, you know, she's ridden a lot of different motorcycles, and she prefers a V-twin.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
The difference to me, I think in my head, is the way I'm thinking about it is, and I guess something a little more comparable to the SV650 would be a CB750, which I have ridden plenty of.
Yeah.
The difference, I think, is on the SV, just with the torque.
Sure.
It feels like you're being thrown down the road, whereas on the CB750, you're being pushed down the road.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Because the SV's just like, Gah, just go. You know, whereas the CB750 is like, yeah, okay, we're doing this. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the difference at Cedar Point between the Top Thrill Dragster and the Gemini.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Got it.
The Gemini eventually gets you up to...
I mean, it's good. You know, it's real good.
It's great, and you get there, and you have a good time mm-hmm. with it, but you don't get that jerk of power.
Yeah,
you know?
And there's satisfaction, the satisfying feeling of grunt that the GT650 Hawk gives you, that the SV650 gives you.
Yeah.
You know, these are V-twins. And, like, even when I was riding that Sportster, I'm not a Sportster guy in particular.
Right, right.
I'm not. But riding around an 883cc Sportster that, I mean, her SV650 makes a lot more power than that 883 Sportster. Yeah. But riding the Sportster was fun because of the torque, because of the V-twininess of the whole thing. I still love my Buell because of that.
You know, that's why I want to get that Hawk all cleaned up and, you know, running good for you this spring.
Dustin saw the gray Hawk in our garage.
Yes.
And he goes, so, you know, I'm available to do any, you know,
in-house work.
That bike might need, you know, it looks like that bike hasn't been ridden for a year, and I think that it needs to be taken out and properly ridden, just from a maintenance standpoint.
I'll wake it up for you. Don't worry. I'll get it going.
Yeah. So he's definitely...
Talk about bikes with soul. I mean, even I was getting out of the car the other day and glanced over at that, and even though, I mean, I love my SV, wouldn't trade it, but the Hawk is a really great bike. I just looked over and sort of admired it for a minute because there's just something about it.
Really, that's such a clean Hawk, too. That thing is
That's
sweet.
That's the cleanest one we've ever had, that's
is
for
it?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's grandpa clean. That is grandpa.
I bought it off of a grandpa.
That explains it.
I bought it off of the original owner, man. And when I bought the bike off of him, I had a hard time getting on the bike because he used the correct preservative and polish for every substance and surface on the bike. So I got on the bike and I sat on it and I put my arm on the gas tank. And when I put my arm on the gas tank, I just slid off the bike. no part. And the bike had never been wet until we did our trip. Yeah. You know, when we took it down to Hocking Hills, that bike had never seen a raindrop or a mud puddle. He really, really loved that bike. Took fantastic care of it. Whereas the last one I bought, the one that I got you, that I brought back from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
When I rode it back from Texas, you know, that was a bike that had been ridden. That was a bike that, and it still was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it was clean, but it had the normal alloy corrosion that you see on a bike, you know, from 1989.
Yeah.
Whereas this one has no alloy corrosion whatsoever. It looks like he did seal it in a little bubble, you know, every year.
Not that we need to get into that story, but I love that story of when you rode that bike back from Texas.
It's, you know what? It's going to go down in life as one of those things that.
That was a very
If you
funny
have
story.
The opportunity to do it and you find a bike that's underpriced on eBay. You know what? Buy the plane ticket. Have the guy pick up the airport and ride a bike. You know, just ride a bike you don't know.
Steal his neighbor's gas.
I wish to God that was his neighbor. That was not his neighbor. That was after I pushed a bike about 2.5 miles.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't steal it. You left money.
I left money. Yeah. But it was literally gas out of a milk jug on the corner of the guy's yard because he just left milk jugs all over the yard. So when he'd get his riding mower up to a point and it would run out of gas. He knew he had a little milk jug laying over there. Well, but the milk jugs didn't have caps on them.
Oh, my God.
So you could see the water in the gas. Yeah, it wasn't cool. And I was looking at that Hawk, and I'm like, I'm about to put the world's worst fuel into you so I can make it another 20 miles down the road to the gas station that might actually have gas.
Yeah.
Because the last two I went to didn't have any. But it's one of those things. Get in. If you can have a motorcycle road adventure, it ain't expensive, man.
No.
It ain't expensive to do. And sometimes it works out great. With that particular trip, it worked out great.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the sun shined on me the entire trip until I got to just south of Columbus. My last 3 hours on the bike were in a fucking downpour. And when I got to Columbus, half an hour, you know, I had leathers on, but I didn't have anything for warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy Scott Smallwood lives down there, and I got into his house and went up there and went into his closet, and I found one of my sweatshirts in his closet. And I grabbed my sweatshirt out of his closet, threw that thing on under my leathers, didn't even leave him a note that I was there, just, you know, jumped back on the bike and hauled ass. And it was one of those things where, you know, yes, you can go from Dallas, Texas to Cleveland, Ohio in well under 24 hours if you've got a good motorcycle and a good attitude. And,
excellent.
And that bike was fantastic.
And that's 650 cc's.
Yeah, it's a 650cc motorcycle.
Everyone thinks they need 1200.
Oh, God, no.
I need this giant fucking motorcycle to move, you know. It's,
no, you really don't.
You just get in it.
Yeah, and it really feels good, too. The I don't know. There's this point. There's this point where it comes around. I mean, there's people out there that buy BS or Triumph Rocket 3s.
Yeah.
It's 2300 cc's.
Yeah.
And it's still, it's a bike I talk about a lot because it fucks with my head. And on the back issue, just go. Don't buy Cycle World if you don't have to. But just pick the damn thing up and look at the back cover. And there is some lunatic on a freaking Triumph Rocket 3. I keep trying to say BSA because that's the last person that did a Rocket 3.
On the Bonneville Salt Flats.
He's on the Bonneville Salt Flats. And they say he's going 176 miles an hour. Well, he goddamn well better be for 2,300 cc's. But there's no fairing on that bike at all. It's got its twin headlights and its 4.5 foot wide radiator. It's car radiator.
And, it's got to hurt.
Oh, the whole thing is just, I mean, the riding position he's in, he looks like a Pringle. He's just...
Yeah, with no bubble to duck behind.
No, he's bendy straw, 176 miles an hour. But, you know, I've always...
It's only 174.
It's 174 miles an hour. So, you know, we could do that going to work on the Busa. But the...
Please tell me you didn't somehow pick up a Busa.
I didn't pick up a Busa, but the Busa is probably... You see, I never got my VMAX, okay? I've admired VMAXs since the day they came out. Mm-hmm. It's been a guilty pleasures bike. And I got that Super Magna, which kind of the same game, hot roddy kind of bike, but not a VMAX. And I've always wanted a VMAX, an early one with the V-Boost that was controllable and you could actually turn it on when you wanted to. And I've always wanted a VMAX, but I've always been like, I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
Okay. And if you're listening and you're a VMAX owner, you're not the guy I'm talking about. It's the other guy. All right. And it's the same reason I respect everything there is to respect about the Hayabusa. I mean, I really do. I think just a ridiculous motorcycle.
It's just another one of those bikes that has got a bad culture that has formed around it.
I assure you that if I own it, I will not stretch the swing arm. I will not lower it a centimeter. I will leave it the way God and the factory intended. I pray to God I don't get a burgundy one. Because yet again, another motorcycle, like they made an awful lot of burgundy ones. Yeah. And burgundy is a color best reserved for Buicks and Oldsmobiles.
Right.
You know, not amazing 200 mile per hour sport bikes.
And you actually have to be an AARP member. Right,
to have anything that owns, that is burgundy.
I think burgundy is just best left to wine.
Right, exactly. Why do we try to make, why do we look at a color and go, well, we got some brown paint left over and we got some red paint left over. You know what? New color. Gonna save some money. Let's make a fun color that only old people will love. The Hayabusa is one of those things that I'm certain at some point I will own one.
Oh yeah, because you own just about one of everything.
But I would like to own it either bone stock, or I would like to chop one up.
I'd love to make a street fight.
Wouldn't it be fun?
Yeah. Make a total naked Busa.
But how do you even use that? I mean, realistically, we have a totally naked Triumph TT600, you know, sport bike, and it's 100 horsepower.
Yeah.
And it's totally cut up and naked and everything else. And that is dangerous. That's 100 horsepower. That's half of what we have available when you talk about a Hayabusa.
Yeah. They're insane.
And that's not really practical. And that does get into the realm of the 2300cc mm-hmm. motor and motor transportation system.
Well, when you see people that are like, oh, it's a turbo Hayabusa, it's like, oh, yeah, because that's just what it needed.
Because you couldn't get there quick enough.
You just couldn't do it fast enough. Right. You had to turbocharge
it. Yeah, it really is one of those things.
Genius.
Yeah. Well, you guys, it has been another fantastic podcast. We hope that you got your money's worth. We would like to request again that you leave feedback. We don't care if it's good, bad, or indifferent. We try to keep them on topic as much as we can. We tend to stray, and that's what makes us so awesome.
Exactly.
We'd like to thank Merritt for showing up tonight. I know it's been a long time since she's been here. She has a really ridiculous schedule. She's the only one in this room going for their doctorate.
That's true.
Doing her dissertation right now. So it was really a really nice surprise to have her show up.
Well, thanks for asking.
Yeah, and Dustin switched us over to the sexy new microphones.
Yeah, so I think these worked out very well.
I do too. Really good. We'd like to thank you guys for listening. Please, please email us your suggestions. I've got some emails. I didn't get to them tonight. We'll read them next week when we do our podcast again. As usual, have fun, drive fast, and take chances.
Good night.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Cleveland Moto. If you have comments or topic suggestions, you can leave them at our blog at www.clevelandmoto.blogspot.com or visit our website at www.clevelandmoto.com.